As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
David Cobb is a college basketball, college football writer at CBS Sports on X at David W. Cobb, and he joins me every single Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I want to wish David a happy Friday. David, how are you doing?
Hey, man. Happy Friday. Not just a happy Friday, a good Friday.
Good Friday.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm doing well.
Yeah, you sell. What are you doing for Easter on Sunday?
We're staying put. We're staying in our little hometown here. Well, not our hometown, but the place where we are now, Robertson County. Going to be going to church, and then we're also coaching under 10 soccer at the YMCA.
Nice.
And so we got a soccer game on Saturday. Gabe, we lost our first game 8-0.
Okay.
There's some problems. There's some kinks to work out here. I was pretty distraught until I realized that the kids didn't care and they just wanted their snacks.
Okay. So the orange slices, the orange slices at halftime, that type of thing.
Well, we had Rice Krispies after.
Oh, golly!
You know, I was sitting here thinking, "Oh man, these kids are going to be so upset. We lost 8-0. Like, what am I going to say?" And then one of the parents brought over the bag of Rice Krispies, and then they all were just over the moon, excited. And I was like, "You know what? As long as we get snacks here every week, we can lose every game 8-0." And they're going to be okay. I don't know if I'm going to be okay with us getting our butts kicked, but they'll be okay.
So Rice Krispies are the losing snack. We have to get a winning snack though, too. Come on. We have to up the ante when they win.
I think that's smart. I think we'll just take them to Chick-fil-A. We'll just take them to Chick-fil-A if we win.
Yeah. Love that. All right. Now, I don't think with your, the soccer team you coach, you're going to have to worry about the transfer portal or, some of your players leaving, but here in Memphis, we have to worry about it. And you were in with Jeffrey yesterday, with Jeffrey Wright and company, yep, talking about this. But PJ Haggerty is in the transfer portal, and the culprit is money. I there's a report out from Jeff Goodman that obviously he wants to, mm-hmm, be a full-time point guard to help his NBA draft stock, but the price is $4 million. Memphis can't afford that, and that money isn't magically appearing anytime soon. I'm going to ask you this off top. Is it wrong to feel a bit hopeless? The reason I say that, obviously, I think Penny can bring in other talent for less money, and he's done that. Sincere Parker committed today. But there's nothing Penny and Memphis can do given the current climate of college athletics. Like, this is not a one-off, losing a guy like PJ Haggerty. It will and has been a recurring theme.
Well, the problem is he was too good. He was too good, and he had eligibility remaining. Because as much as we want to look at Kendrick Davis and uphold him as the standard of the Penny Hardaway era, who's to say that if Kendrick Davis had an additional season of eligibility that he might not have gone and done the same thing? And so, I mean, he's done a really good job of plucking guys from Tulsa, plucking guys from SMU, right? But the problem with Haggerty is he got too good too fast, and he had eligibility remaining. So it's almost like you almost feel like you should go shopping for guys who just have 1 year left, so then they can't break your heart. I mean, it kind of feels that way. $4 million for PJ Haggerty, it's you know, that I think that's the asking price. I think that when you list your house on realtor.com, you list it for $450,000, and then maybe you're okay with $415,000. Maybe you go in the portal and you ask for $4 million, but when the dust settles, you'll settle for $3.2 million. And if JT Toppin's out here getting $4 million, then yeah, I think PJ Haggerty could get $3.2 million. But I'll also say this, man, I think there's a lot of panic spending going on right now in college basketball.
Yep.
I think there are some programs that are spending way too much in overspending on guys, paying them more than they're worth. And eventually what's going to happen come June, there's still going to be players in the portal. There's not going to be as much money to go around if the house settlement has gone through. Guys are going to start to get anxious and get antsy, and they're going to start taking less money. And for PJ Haggerty, if he's going through this draft process potentially, you know, that could influence sort of his timeline. And so I don't know. I don't know if $4 million is realistic, but certainly think he can get more than three.
Well, bigs are getting the most money. They're commanding the most money because they're harder to find, right? Like guards, I feel like there's a thought around the country. Maybe not an All-American guard, you know, consensus All-American guard like PJ Haggerty, but I feel like the thought for most coaches is there's just more guard talent out there on the open market than there is for bigs.
Yeah, that's accurate. I think that's the case, especially bigs that can do different things. Like you can find bodies, but you can't find rim protection. You can't find floor spacing from your big men. So I think for bigs who have clearly defined skill sets and strengths, that's probably the top of the market with players like that. But you know, that's why you're seeing Yaxel Lindeborg, who Memphis fans know well, who Memphis beat a couple of times this past season. You're seeing him ranked as the number one overall transfer in some places. I think with us at CBS, he's at number one right now. And if you're Memphis, you're thinking, well, PJ Haggerty was the AAC Player of the Year. But when you're looking at it from a roster construction standpoint, there might be another player out there who can play the role of a PJ Haggerty. I mean, there's just not too many 6'10" guys who can pass it like Yaxel can pass it, who can protect the rim the way he can protect it, handle it the way he handles it. Yeah, he had some bad games against Memphis, but I think coaches are getting enamored with his tools because those tools are not replicable elsewhere in the sport.
So I want to dig into that feeling, that feeling of hopelessness. How do Memphis and schools like it fix their money issue? Is it just hope that multiple alums have startups that become billion-dollar companies? Or, like, what's the fix there?
It's getting into a better conference. And I'm not talking about going to the revamped Pac-12. That's jumping to another sinking ship. It might give you a temporary boost in ticket sales. It might give you a little bit of a jump in terms of fan interest and fan excitement. And that's not worth nothing. It's at least worth something. But I'm talking about getting into a conference that has a media rights deal that can make revenue sharing really practical for your athletic department, and practical in a sense that, like, you don't have to shut down the rest of the department just to keep paying the football and basketball players. So that's what the answer is. I mean, you just can't keep going back to Fred Smith with your hand out, right? Because, I mean, eventually for Memphis and for a lot of these programs, even at the high major level, the money eventually is going to run dry. And I think this cycle right now is particularly tough on the mid majors, because the high majors can flex in a pinch and go higher than they're comfortable with. I don't know that many of these mid major or non power conference schools can. And, you know, so what's the answer there, the fix there? I don't know. For some, it might be, we're not going to pay our football players. We're going to tell our football coach, sorry, man, we care more about basketball right now. Or for football coaches, it might be, hey, we're going to have to rob the basketball program, right? Memphis didn't want to do that. Memphis has great programs in both those sports. You don't want to have to take away from Ryan to give to Penny, or take away from Penny to give to Ryan. And so I think that it's a great problem to have, that you have two very healthy, high caliber programs, but it makes it really difficult to bankroll both of them.
Mm-hmm. Now, I heard you give this spin yesterday with the news of PJ Haggerty in the transfer portal, so we'll get to that. There's probably around $3 million now to spend on players if you're the University of Memphis, $2.5 to $3 million. And I think in the theoretical world we live in sports talk radio, maybe, just maybe, four $750,000 players could yield better results than one $3 million player.
Obviously, it could.
It's possible.
I know that sounds like trying to put lipstick on a pig. And you know, but look, you got to think about this the way a general manager would think about it. Okay, my best players are leaving a free agency. Cool, now I have an opportunity to build a new roster, and I can build it out however I want to, because there's over 1,000 players uncommitted in the transfer portal right now. You can go out and find 9 or 10 who fit together. Maybe you can be better. Like, I think if you're putting together the roster, like, you kind of got to get excited about that. And I know from a fan perspective, it just guts you when you lose Haggerty. But hey, look at this too. When I was on the air with Jeffrey, Pete Thamel had the tweet about Dane Danger.
Yeah.
Well, subsequent reporting there from Jason Munns and from others is that, hey, if he gets that year, he's gonna be back at Memphis. So that's good news. I've seen reports today that they're in on, you know, pursuing Aaron Bradshaw, former McDonald's All-American, 5-star guy. Yep. Who started at Kentucky, played last season at Ohio State. He could be, like, if you don't get Dane back, I don't think he'll be as good as Dane, but the type of tools and stuff that could come to the American and average 12-7 with a block and a half per game, you know, something like that. So from that standpoint, like, I don't know, like, if I were working in player personnel at Memphis right now on the basketball side, like, I'd be kind of excited, because if PJ Haggerty comes back, like, that's the ideal scenario, but then you're boxed into what you can put around him, and it's sort of, this is PJ's team, and we're going to sign some low budget, let's say veteran minimum type of guys, to use NBA phrasing. Now you're not back into that. You can go out and spend a little bit on some players who will be much better than the average player on any other AAC roster.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of one PJ Haggerty versus Sincere Parker, Julius Thedford, Aaron Bradshaw, and Quante Berry. Like, obviously you want PJ Haggerty on your roster if you can have him, but who knows? You could be better top to bottom the other way.
I think that's accurate. I think the way you phrase it, you could be better top to bottom. If you have PJ Haggerty, you got him, and you got a bunch of guys who are coming for a jersey and a scholarship and whatever's left over after PJ, you know, signs his deal. In this scenario now, you got some cash to spend. And, you know, I've never doubted Penny the GM. I've never doubted Penny the roster manager. I believe he'll get this done, and I believe his name still carries some clout, too. I mean, obviously it does. I mean, it's Penny freaking Hardaway. So you look around and you see the other coaches in this league. I mean, none of them can hold a candle to him in terms of their visibility, in terms of their track record of producing All-Americans, NBA draft picks, guys who have gone to play a high level overseas. So, I mean, I think Memphis, relative to the AAC, remains in fantastic shape. It's just, nobody wants it to be relative to the AAC.
Right.
Everybody wants it to be relative to the rest of the country, and that's where the problem comes in.
All right, now, the story you referenced a bit earlier that Jason Munns wrote after talking with Dane Danger's mom last night, it sounded good. It sounded good. It sounded like, okay, if Dane gets the waiver and is able to come back for another year, he'll come back to the University of Memphis. But back to our conversation about bigs and how much value they hold on the open market. It's one thing for his mom to say, we appreciate loyalty, we like doing good by the people that have done good by us. But at the same time, if Dane Danger is able to get that extra year of eligibility, like, let's just think, or like sort of, you know, give an idea to the people out there of what type of deal he could get for 1 year elsewhere. Because I would imagine the type of big he is and what he was able to accomplish last year, what he's been able to accomplish throughout his entire career, I'd imagine that would be a huge bag for one more year in college.
Probably so, but now you're not paying Haggerty, so
maybe
you could do it.
But the point I'm making is, you can talk about loyalty all you want until you have a $4 million payday in your face.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know that there's any guarantee. And if he is in the portal, I mean, he's going to have options, right? So, yeah, I don't think it's a guarantee, but there's more hope than maybe it initially seemed. And he's still got to get that extra year, too. I can't for the life of me figure out why he wouldn't, when Chad Baker-Mazzara is fixing to go play college basketball at age 26 next season. Meanwhile, Dane Danger has really only played 3 seasons. Yeah.
Draymond Mark, by the way, at Houston played 15 million seasons.
We've got guys who played 5 seasons of 30 plus games. And Dane Danger played 3 seasons of 30 plus games. He took a red shirt, a medical red shirt. One of those years was the COVID year that's not supposed to count anyway. And now there's also another lawsuit, shocker out there, that could adjust the clock to where, you know, typically outside of COVID, you've had 5 years to complete 4 seasons. And that's been the NCAA rule. Well, the COVID year threw a wrench into that. I think that should apply to Dane, because that was his first year. And then, I would think he could get eligible, but that's also not a guarantee.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, tongue-in-cheek here, definitely being facetious, but who knows if he has a better opportunity of getting that waiver cleared if he doesn't go to the University of Memphis. You know, the waivers in the University of Memphis have not, it's not been kind. Not been kind to the University of Memphis.
Yeah, you might be onto something.
Yeah, for sure. All right, now, I also saw yesterday John Calipari put out a video on his official account on X about how many returners they have. They transfer portal, no one's getting into the transfer portal from Arkansas for the most part. They're going to return DJ Wagner. They're going to return a lot of different Billy Richmond, a lot of guys like that. John Calipari put out that video yesterday, and I think he feels pretty confident about what he can put on the floor next year. What do you think about that team if they're able to return everybody like John Calipari put out yesterday? And also, got to give credit to John Calipari's social media team. The production value is soaring through the roof. They have sound effects now. They have cutaways. Beautiful stuff.
Yeah, their Hogs Plus operation is pretty good media setup over there. I will point out he has lost Big Z. Z is gone. He's going to Illinois, so he's not batting 1,000 here. I'll tell you what though, this is where the injury to Aduthiero and the injury to Boogie Fland maybe in the long run actually help Arkansas, specifically with Billy Richmond, because Billy Richmond wasn't playing a ton. He was utilized almost exclusively off the bench. Not getting a lot of minutes early on in the season. Well, as the year goes on and those injuries with Boogie and with Thiero came along, it opened up a role for Billy Richmond III to go out and really show what he could do. And so he went from being a guy who a lot of people had on, like, penciled in to be in the portal to being a guy that clearly proved his value to Arkansas and to John Calipari, to where I'm sure he's getting a significant and well-deserved pay bump, and he's going to stay and have some continuity there. So Arkansas still got to go out and make some noise in the portal to fill out this roster. But it's not as if they've got to go big game hunting. I'll say that. They've got their core in place, a couple of freshmen that are going to be, you know, as per usual, a big part of what Cal is going to do. It's not the norm to have 5-6 key returning players back, but you know, it looks like that's what it's going to be for Arkansas.
All right, now thoughts on Grizzlies Mavs tonight before I let you roll.
Yeah, I want to see them. Okay, so I got a really nice pep talk yesterday from Eric Hasseltine when he was on with Jeffrey and I, and he kind of talked me into thinking, all right, like, hey, if they win tonight, yeah, they got swept by the Thunder in the regular season, but he kind of laid out, you know, those games were competitive for the most part until the end, and you never know what could happen. And, you know, so I don't know. I guess I'm kind of on board with the idea of them giving it one last college try and you know, going into the playoffs and seeing what can happen. So, obviously, John Morant's ankle has me a little nervous, yep. But yeah, I'm going to be fired up for it. I'm going to get way, way, way emotionally invested, and you know, hopefully they can get it done.
Hopefully they can match size with size tonight. You have to have Zach Edey and Jaren Jackson on the floor. That's the most important thing. Thing that the confidence that I do take from the matchup in particular, as opposed to what it could have been with the Kings, though, I don't know if the Mavs have the same ability to take advantage of the Grizzlies with their, you know, their lack of perimeter defense, staying in front of guys on the wing. Because I don't know if, the Mavs just don't have a bunch of twitchy athleticism out there on the wing that can just at will drive into the paint, blow by guys.
Not at all. And the Grizzlies have plenty of perimeter firepower. That's not the issue for them. The Anthony Davis containing him, though, is going to be problematic. It always is for the Grizzlies. And now you're down depth, obviously, without Brandon Clark. So you mentioned Zach Edey, Jaren Jackson Jr. If Jaren can stay out of foul trouble, and Edey, too. I mean, Edey is kind of foul-prone. You're going to have those guys on the floor. Otherwise, we're going to be turning and, you know, pointing to Jay Huff to get out there and do something for you, which I don't think is ideal. I'm with you, man. I think from a perimeter standpoint, like, Dallas cannot hold a candle to the talent Memphis is going to have out there on the floor tonight. This is a team that had Luka Doncic and had Kyrie Irving, and, you know, neither of those guys are on the floor tonight. So there's no excuse for your backcourt not to outplay theirs, but can you just survive on the inside, or can you get Anthony Davis into foul trouble? Probably not, but I mean, it'd be great if you could. It would make things a lot simpler. Derek Lively's another guy who they've got who's just a tree out there. So, you know, Grizzlies got to get out, run in transition, hit a bunch of threes. They can do it. It's not like Dallas is limping in here. Like, they've obviously got Klay and Anthony Davis, so you can't discount them entirely. But this is not a team that – I'll say this. Whoever wins this game, like if Memphis wins this game, they'll be more competitive with Oklahoma City than Dallas would be.
Yeah.
So I mean, given that you got home court advantage tonight, you know, I'd like to think they can get it done.
Yeah, and I will say this too. Like, I think you'll – you know, it's rare, but I think this is something that's happening. I think Dallas Mavericks fans are rooting for the Grizzlies tonight. So you would depress that fan base even further if you lost, if you end up losing to the Mavs and letting that stupid team get through.
Well, this was the year why the play should have just canceled the play-in this year. The top eight were the best eight, clearly. I mean, Sacramento and Dallas had no business having a shot at making the playoffs.
I think that's fair, but play-in, I've enjoyed the play-in thoroughly, though, since it's been a part of NBA basketball. I think it keeps you more competitive. But I agree with you. They were, what, 7, 8, 9 games back from the Grizzlies at the number 8 spot? You shouldn't be able to play in if it's that big of a you know, deficit you're trying to make.
Here's my thing. We should just just completely erase conference affiliation when it comes to the NBA playoffs, because the East never has 8 good teams. They never do. So just seed them 1 through 16, and if you end up with 10 or 11 from the West, so be it. Like, just reseed once you get to the playoffs, and who cares what league you are in, because the West always has so many more good teams than the East.
Yeah, but then the East would never. God. I mean, by the time we got to the conference finals, you may eliminate the East altogether by that point.
Who cares? We want to see the best teams.
I guess I get what you're saying. But, David, I appreciate it, man. Have a good weekend.
All right, brother.
He is David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X, college basketball, college football writer for CBS Sports. And he's brought to you by Oxbow, the family-owned and operated retail store that's been making waves in Memphis for over a decade. Stop passing their location off of Poplar and go in. Off Poplar on June Road, behind the Amoco station before you get to 240. 964 June Road to be exact. When you get in, most unique retail experience in the city of Memphis, because they have the clothing that you need, T-shirts, shorts, pants, best men's casual clothing selection, whether it's Gentile, Martin Dingman, Howler Brothers, go get a Gentile polo of your choice for your favorite team. They have Grizzlies, Tigers, SEC favorites, Arkansas, Alabama, Tennessee, you name it, they have it over at Oxbow, 964 June Road. But this is where it gets unique. On the top floor, they have hunting and outdoor essentials perfect for the waterfowl hunter. If you like to go tailgate, they have cups, coolers, and koozies by Yeti that you can get the essentials. You can go get the essentials for your tailgate parties, whether you're going to the Grove or to Tiger Lane or getting to Fayetteville, whatever it may be. They have new and used vintage vinyl for music lovers. They have the best selection that I've taken advantage of on more than one occasion of entertainment and sports memorabilia. They have signed posters. If you're a card collector, you can go in and get some cards there. So get over to Oxbow, 964 June Road, take advantage of their vast selection. Or you can go online, shopoxbow.com. That's shopoxbeau.com. And when you go fill up that shopping cart with whatever your heart desires, make sure to put in my promo code before you ultimately pay. My promo code is TheGabeShow, all caps, no spaces, TheGabeShow. If you use that promo code, you get 20% off your online order at shopoxbow.com. Whether you're going online or in-store to 964 June Road, remember to shop local, shop Oxbow. Now we've come to that point in the show where it's time for Connor and I to give our NBA playoff picks. We're going to pick every single... Rolling along, hour number 2 of the Gabe Kuhn Show is presented by the Memphis Showboats. Get your tickets now to see the Showboats at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium, UFL.com, or call 901-341-7008, UFL.com, or call 901-341-7008. Now it's time for Connor and I to make some NBA playoff picks. We're going to make a pick for each series in round one. We'll start with the 1-8 matchups. I know that they're not set in stone, but I think we have a pretty strong suspicion about how they're going to go. We'll start with the Cavs versus the winner of the Heat and the Hawks tonight. I'm going to go with the Cavs. No surprise there. I think they've been one of the best teams in the entire NBA, 60-win season. They've been rolling with Kenny Atkinson. They've been really good offensively and defensively, top 5 in both offensive and defensive rating. And I just think they have too much power against anybody they play, either team they play in the first round.
Yeah, the Cavs are going to win.
All right, now 100%. Thunder versus the winner of the Grizzlies and the Mavs.
It's going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's kind of funny. We'll talk about Thunder versus the winner of the Grizzlies and the Mavericks. Everyone wants to say that this first-round Western Conference series against the Thunder will be a bloodbath. I think it'll be worse in the Eastern Conference.
I agree.
I don't think the Hawks or the Heat have anything to to give the Cavs.
Nothing.
At least I think if the Grizzlies get through against the Thunder, you have something to offer. You have a big three to offer if Jaren, Dez, and Ja. Those guys could go off on any given night. You could see what happens from there. But even in that scenario, I'm going to take the Thunder against the winner of the Mavs.
I think that's fair.
And the Grizz. So we'll move on pretty quickly from there. Let's go to the 2-7 matchup in the East, Celtics versus Magic. I think this one's relatively easy. We'll see Paolo Banchero. I want to see if he can really get rolling. In the playoffs, maybe steal one from the Celtics. We know the Celtics like to lose game ones. We know that they struggle early in series. But I think the Celtics, when you look at their three-point ability, the ability they have to stretch the floor, the defensive prowess they have, they're another team that's top five in offensive and defensive rating. I think the Celtics get through relatively easily. Give me them in five games.
I also think that the Celtics are going to win this series. It might be five or six games, but I think that they just have too much. The Magic are a good team, but they cannot shoot, and you are not going to beat the Boston Celtics if you can't shoot.
Now, this is where the series start to be a little bit more up in the air. The Rockets, the 2 seed in the West, play the number 7 seed Warriors. The Warriors, after beating the Grizzlies to get into that 7 spot, are minus 200 favorites. I have one question about the series, then I'll give my pick, and I'll give you my rationale behind the answer to the question I have. My question is, will the officials allow the Rockets to defend? We know Jimmy Butler gets a favorable whistle when you get into the playoffs. We know he's very aggressive when he gets in the playoffs. Can they defend the perimeter with Steph Curry? We'll see. But will the officials allow the Rockets to defend and be physical? I tend to think it will lean their way. They have home court advantage. When you get into the playoffs, officials tend to hold their whistle a little bit more. I think I like the Rockets in 6 or 7 games in this series. Now, can they find a way to keep up with the three-point production that the Warriors will have ultimately with Steph Curry? That's yet to be seen. But I think when you look at the Rockets, I think they'll get more out of their surrounding pieces than the Warriors get out of their surrounding pieces. I think the Warriors are way too reliant on Jimmy Butler and Steph Curry, and then the rest of their roster. We have yet to see anybody sort of step up in any grand way. They've stopped playing Jonathan Kuminga, a guy who could light it up off the bench or potentially in the starting lineup. I like the Rockets just because I think they're deeper and I think they can get more help from their surrounding pieces.
I hope you're right. I do think, though, I may be leaning Warriors just because I think that Jimmy and Steph, at least in a first-round matchup against a young basketball team, does hold an advantage. And I do think that Draymond, as much as we may dislike him and his antics, is going to have something to say in this series. He could probably at least attempt to contain somebody like Şengün on the Rockets. I really want the Rockets to win this series. I just think that the Warriors is a really tough matchup for them. So I think I'm going to lean Warriors, but I'm hoping for the Rockets.
All right, now the 3-6 matchup out of the East. Knicks come into this series against the Pistons. Knicks the 3 seed, Pistons the 6 seed. Knicks are minus 430 to win the series, according to FanDuel Sportsbook. A lot of people like the Pistons, one of the best turnarounds, if not the best turnarounds we've seen in NBA basketball year over year. J.B. Bickerstaff's done a really good job with that Pistons team. Cade Cunningham is headed for his first All-NBA team of his young career. But the Knicks, Jalen Brunson, Josh Hart, OG Anunoby, Mikal Bridges, Karl Anthony Towns. It's a really good starting lineup. And I'm going to go ahead and pick the Knicks. I think this will be a little bit easier than people are thinking just because I think they're better at three-point shooting. I think that they are better in the half court. Jalen Brunson can set up the rest of his teammates than what Cade Cunningham has done. I also think the Pistons just don't have the playoff experience or scars yet to really make this a series that lasts 7 games. Where they could potentially prevail. And I also think, I know the Knicks have struggled defensively the entirety of the year, but the reason they put this team together and the current construction of it is for playoff basketball. I think their defensive pieces in Josh Hart, OG Anunoby, and Mikal Bridges can step up on that end of the floor and sort of neutralize what the Pistons do well.
I think it's going to be a really fun series. The Pistons are probably going to get a game or two, but ultimately I think the Knicks are going to win this series.
Now here's one. This is my favorite series of the first round, bar none. The number 3 in the Western Conference, the Lakers, and the number 6, Timberwolves. Lakers come into this series as minus 196 favorites, according to FanDuel Sportsbook. Connor, I'll let you take the lead here.
Man, this is one of the hardest to pick because what you have here is LeBron and Luka, and I would even say Austin Reeves going up against a probably more complete basketball team in the Minnesota Timberwolves. However, the last few months of the Lakers, they have shown the ability to be able to defend, and I think it's ultimately going to come down to, can the Lakers impose their will on the Timberwolves, or can the Timberwolves impose their will on the Lakers? Is Rudy Gobert going to be able to play in this series? If you see a lot of Rudy Gobert minutes, it means it's going well for the Timberwolves. If you do not see Rudy Gobert, it means it's probably going well for the Lakers. And then you have Anthony Edwards, who is a young basketball player, one of the young faces in the league, who has had a lot of success in the playoffs already in his career. He has shown the ability to be able to get it done against superstars. I mean, he took down Nikola Jokic. He beat him at home in a Game 7 in a comeback in a massive, massive game. Ultimately, though, I think I'm going to lean the Lakers because they have the, I would say they have two of the three best players in the series. And I do think that that is ultimately what is going to matter. So I'm going to lean Luka and I'm going to lean LeBron in this series. But man, I think it could go six or seven easily.
This is where, you know, the coaches are going to have to earn their money. Chris Finch and J.J. Redick. I've appreciated what J.J. Redick has done to this point in the season, but now it's playoff basketball. And in playoff basketball, rebounding, defense, that matters pretty heavily. Now, the Lakers, since they made the Luka Doncic trade, we had questions about the defense. They have performed relatively well. They've found ways to sort of reinvigorate that defensive identity. LeBron has played a little bit more defense. Luka, even at times, has sat down and defended. I'm going to go, though, with the Timberwolves. And the reason I'm going to go Timberwolves, I think in seven games, I think this is going to be a knock them down, drag them out series. But I'm going with the Timberwolves because I think both teams have to be hard-headed here. You have to be stubborn, like Eddie Gonzalez said earlier. The Lakers, they're going to have to force small ball lineups onto the floor because they don't have any front court pieces or depth. They only have Jackson Hayes. And then the Timberwolves are going to have to play big. You have the advantage in the front court. You have Naz Reid, Rudy Gobert, and you have Julius Randle. You have to use that size to your advantage. So I think we'll have a chess match back and forth each game that passes. I'm going to take the Timberwolves, though, because I think the size and the depth of their roster is ultimately going to show through. Now, the difference here is if the Lakers are going to win, like you just look at those erasers they have in LeBron James and Luka Doncic. If they combine for 80 points and 30 rebounds and 20 assists, there's nothing you can do about that, and I fully recognize that. But I think the Timberwolves have shown, once they get into the playoffs, last year they were in the Western Conference Finals, they can beat teams that have some playoff experience. They have some scars of their own. I'm betting on that in the first round this year. Now, moving on, Eastern Conference 4-5. We have Pacers, who are minus 198 heading into this series against the number 5 Bucks. The Bucks have won eight, keep this in mind, won eight straight to end the regular season. Giannis, in four of his final five games, he had triple doubles. How do you see it, Connor?
But this one's tough. This one's really hard because I like both of these teams. The Damian Lillard is interesting. Is he going to be able to come back? How effective is he going to be?
He will not be active game one, but he could potentially ramp up later in the series.
I think ultimately, though, I am going to lean the Pacers, but I don't feel good about it because Giannis is far and away the best player in this series. There's no doubt about it. I just think that some people sleep on the Pacers and how good they have actually
been in the playoffs. Eastern Conference Finals last year.
Made it to Eastern Conference Finals last year. Now, that being said, they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals
because the Knicks were hurt.
The teams that they played were banged up. But they are still a very good basketball team. They've been absolutely rolling since the All-Star break, since the trade deadline. They have been great. Tyrese Halliburton has really figured it out. He struggled early on in the season. They still have Pascal Siakam. They have a lot of hard-nosed defenders. I'm going to be going with the Pacers, but that Giannis thing, man, I might be looking up in a couple of days and say, damn, that was a bad pick.
I'm taking Giannis in the Bucks because Giannis is the best player in the series by far. I don't think anyone in the NBA really has a full answer for them. I don't know if the back line of the Indiana Pacers with, you know, Miles Turner and Pascal Siakam. Pascal, you know, both those guys, good defenders in their own right. Miles Turner, more of a rim protector. Pascal can actually switch off and do some things on the perimeter as well as protect the rim. But I just don't think that back line's strong enough to deal with Giannis over a seven-game series. Now, if Giannis gets hurt or gets banged up, different conversation altogether. But I think that the Bucks showed at the end of the year they can get by without Damian Lillard. Certainly they want him back as they make a deeper run into the playoffs. But 8-0 to end the year without Damian Lillard. Giannis took a front seat. Four of his final five games were triple-doubles. I'm betting on that carrying over into the playoffs. That's why I'm going to take the Bucks over top of the Pacers. And then the final one we'll talk about, Nuggets versus the Clippers. This is probably the hardest one to pick, in my opinion. Number four seed Nuggets are -120, according to FanDuel Sportsbook. I'll go ahead and take the lead on this. I'm going to lean the Nuggets. I the Clippers are deep. I think they are physical as hell. Ivica Zubats has been awesome. But I feel like we're leaning into his defensive prowess a little bit too much when we talk about his matchup against Jokic. No one can stop Jokic. You can only hope to contain him for a certain period of time. I think that Jokic, his ability, Jamal Murray steps up in the playoffs. Aaron Gordon's been there before. This team won the championship a couple of years ago. I think they get through this first-round matchup against the Clippers.
I'm going Clippers. Clippers have been the team that I've been saying I think could be a dark horse all season. I'm going to be going with them. Kawhi, James Harden, Zubac, and Norm Powell is a hell of a four to have in the playoffs. They are hard-nosed. They can score the basketball. And, yeah, you're not going to be able to stop Nikola Jokic, but can you stop the other guys? Yep. They've got the personnel to be able to do it mostly. So it's really interesting because I'm going to be honest. There's only three series in the first round that I know 100% who's going to win that series. The Celtics are going to win, the Cavs are going to win, and the Thunder are going to win. There's really no doubt about that in my mind. Every other series feels like a coin flip.
Yep.
It is going to be a very, very exciting first round for the NBA.
Yep, I'm hyped up to see it. And we'll see it start over the weekend on Saturday and Sunday. Now let's go ahead and grab a break. When we come back, we'll get to small talk. Now as we close in on about 2 hours until game time, Memphis Grizzlies versus the Mavericks at FedEx Forum, I wanted to dive into maybe a source of positivity around tonight's game with the history of the play-in tournament. I know it's a short history. We're only talking about 4 years of data. But the history of 10 seeds, which the Mavs are in the Western Conference, you know, getting through and getting into the playoffs, not very good. In fact, they're 0-for so far. In 2021, the Hornets and the Spurs, as the 10 seeds in the Eastern and Western Conference, were eliminated. Hornets and Spurs, same thing in 2022, eliminated. 2023, Raptors and Pelicans, eliminated. 2024, Hawks and Warriors, both eliminated. So if the Mavericks were to win tonight, it would be the first time in the history of the play-in tournament that a 10 seed is able to get through and get into the playoffs. So history tells us through a four-year history, short history, that the Grizzlies should be able to overcome that, handle business against the 10 seed in the Western Conference.
Please. No history made tonight. Please, basketball gods.
And, well,
I guess
the Heat have an opportunity as well.
Listen,
if they beat the Hawks.
Basketball gods, it's been a rough go with y'all in Memphis the last 2 years.
We don't need you. We don't.
However, we are going up against Nico Harrison, who has angered the gods in a way we've never seen before. Do not allow them to win this game. Please. I am praying to you on this Good Friday to not allow that man to advance to the NBA playoffs. We cannot allow it. Memphis, we have to take a stand. We have to take a stand.
I don't need you.
And protect the NBA from the evils of Nico Harrison.
Basketball gods, I don't need you for a year. I don't need you for 6 months.
I don't need you for two years.
I don't need you for a decade. I need you for one more night. One more night.
Please.
Give the Grizzlies some luck tonight.
Heal John Morant's ankle.
Yeah.
Please.
Hey, update on that. He is, let's see, the latest that we have gotten as far as a report on John Morant is that he is, what's the word that was used? I just saw this. What's the word that was used? He's determined to play coming up tonight.
They got him that horse shot.
Yeah. He's going to be able to run through a wall and feel no pain. That's what John Morant is going to be on tonight. Should be fun. Now, what should be fun is we have one more hour left in the show. We're going to spend it wisely. We're going to get to the Blitz at 6:30. But coming up next, we'll bring on my normal guest on a Friday to talk some Grizzlies, talk tonight's game. That's Parker Fleming.